Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. If this is indeed your virgin voyage, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degreed thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday. At this time, don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturdays, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And, of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right, the Alan Nathan Show is entering its 27th year of national syndication, all thanks to you, reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right. Please get out of the thought control business. Our topics du jour, as you may have heard, well, an appellate court allows Trump's tariffs to continue, thus reversing a lower court's usurpation of the executive separated powers. But what happens when it reaches the Supreme Court? Also, the Supreme Court ruled recently 8-0 to limit any court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects based upon supposedly environmental effects on other projects outside the one in focus. Will this narrowing of judicial power impact nationwide injunctions as well? Also, Rasmussen and Insider Advantage polls show the Trump approval is at plus 7 and 11, respectively. But you got to wonder, why do pollsters who were most accurate in the 2024 presidential election for some reason reflect much higher numbers than all the rest? We have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, Tom Schatz, president of Citizens Against Government Waste. His editorials on fiscal policies have appeared in publications nationwide, including the New York Times, as well as the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Schatz has testified on plenty of occasions concerning government waste issues before both congressional committees and regulatory bodies. And again, he joins us today. Tom, great to have you back. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in. Well, this appellate court has a lot of people buzzing. And it's intriguing when you look at it. But I'm asking you, in your estimation, why did the lower court ever rule as it did? Again, the appellate court has corrected it. And now we've got to wait for the Supreme Court, because I know it's going to go all the way up. But in your estimation, why did the U.S. Court of International Trade ever rule that Trump's tariffs must cease because they exceed his authority, despite Congress vesting in him that very authority? They did so in Title 50-50. Again, thankfully, they were overruled. But why did they do this when, as a matter of language, Congress conferred upon the president this authority via Title 50. I tell you what, if you can, just hold your response for a second. I want to share with you a take on this by Senator Kennedy as well, because he had some insights on this. He also can't figure it out. Clip 4. He was on, by the way, Fox News's Ingram Angle with Laura Ingram. This is what he had to say. Funny guy, Senator John Kennedy, Republican out of the great state of Louisiana. Clip 4, James, if you please.
I think it's pretty clear that the president has tariff authority. Congress gave it to him. Sooner or later, the Supreme Court is going to have to address this. Those who oppose the executive branch and those who oppose the legislative branch and are seeking recourse in the in the courts are at some point going to dig up more snakes than they can kill.
Now, he seems to be onto something here, because the law itself, the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEPA, again, Title 50, is a congressional law that Jimmy Carter signed in 1977, and it specifically authorizes any president to declare when he believes there exists a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security, foreign policy, or economy of the United States that originates in whole or substantial part outside the United States. And again, that's something that Congress says the president gets to determine, not a court. Tom Schatz.
That would be correct, but as everyone has seen, judges across the country, even on a court that very few people have heard of, are just making these decisions based on whatever their interpretation of the law might be. So that is why we have a Supreme Court. For example, the Supreme Court decided that President Trump can take away that temporary status for people that came in from several countries under Joe Biden, like 500,000 from various Central American and Caribbean countries. And he said, well, it was temporary. Biden did it. Trump can undo it. So so some of the things will end up there. And then you get kind of the more rational judgment, because the courts, of course, do play a role. They have to interpret the law. And sometimes they're wrong.
I know, but this seems to be something where they're wrong on point. It's almost as if we have to indulge their functional illiteracy in order for them to just be credibly wrong on the law. They are in defiance of the law. They're not just wrong on it. They are knowingly opposing the law because they don't agree with the way a certain president has determined a threat to be, even though when you look at the 184 countries upon whom he subjected retaliatory tariffs, every single one of the suckers were clobbering us with tariffs that we were not hitting them with. And even after his corrections are at most on a par with what was being thrown at us. But for the most part, the majority of those countries, while he's retaliated, he did not retaliate with a percentage that's equal to the one to which they were subjecting us. Isn't that fair to point out?
True. And, of course, he's reduced a number of those in terms of, because he's been talking, or the administration has been talking on and off, moving ahead with deals like the UK and at least a temporary change with China, or some kind of truce, I call it at this point. So that's the point of what he's doing, is to try to equalize trade. Interestingly, the trade deficit was cut in half last month, so it's moving in the right direction. Inflation was lower, wages were higher, so something's working. And I think it's an opportunity, as what, $7 trillion in new investment in the U.S. has been pledged, to really move the U.S. forward, which is his point. So judges that kind of get in the way, the president's understandably upset about it.
Yeah, especially when the way they're getting in the way is just not cricket. I mean, it's got nothing to do with their separated powers. Like, in the name of their own separated power, they're usurping those of the president. And, of course, he can stop this. He has the option. Because the aggregate judiciary is, by constitutional design, not permitted to enforce its own ruling, born out of that comes the president's check on them. He can put a check on them through noncompliance. And if enough people are upset about it, impeach him in the House, try him in the Senate. But if they can't get the 2/3 votes required in the Senate, then by default, the president wins that separation of powers argument, and his decision and action stands. Isn't that fair to say?
Yeah, and they already impeached him twice, so not going to happen this time because they don't have the votes or the power. But yes, that's the ultimate check on the president's power.
But if the president goes to trial, what they would do is they would be putting a reciprocal check on the president after he checked the judiciary. And if the check they try to put on the president following his noncompliance with the judiciary is to not have enough votes to find him guilty or to expel him, well, then by default, he then will have won that separation of powers argument with the judiciary, and his rejection of them will stand, and his tariffs can continue regardless, and it would be all born out of this constitutional remedy we have for when there's a battering of heads between branches. Isn't that fair to point out?
Yes, yes, but I don't think it's going to go that far this time.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. Let me see here, because I'm trying to see. Do I have, I think, yes, I do have it. Yeah, Tom, are you able to stay on for the following segment?
Yes.
Good, good. I wanted to take a look, make sure I didn't have somebody lined up first. The reason I'm asking is because I wanted to share with you another development with the Supreme Court, this 8-0 ruling they came up with, which basically is saying that individual judges no longer have the authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects just because of somebody arguing that it would have a supposedly environmental impact on other projects outside the one in focus. I'm wondering if this narrowing of judicial power might impact another issue, that issue being nationwide injunctions. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show. Going to be right back.
May is Women's Health Month and a great opportunity for women to take charge of their health and take advantage of the opportunity to see their providers and care for their health needs. It's important to stay on top of our yearly checkup because women's life comes in stages and there are different health considerations that come with each stage, whether it be your menstrual stage of life, your reproductive stage of life, or the menopausal years of life. Each stage comes with its own considerations, and the more proactive we are and more knowledgeable about each one of those stages, the better we set ourselves up for our health later on in life. It turns out that our gut changes with us. And as we know, what we consume can really contribute a great deal to our overall health, especially as we go through the different stages of life. Keeping in mind the different nutritionals and different supplements that we need as we go through those phases is important, whether it be certain supplements that might help with the symptoms of premenstrual syndrome, or whether it be the nutritionals that we need during pregnancy to take care of ourselves or the pregnancy that we're carrying. All of this is important. Folks can head over to bayer.us, B-A-Y-E-R.us, for more information.
In 2026, America will celebrate its 250th birthday. But Johnsonville, the nation's number one sausage brand, doesn't think the country can afford to wait a whole year to celebrate. New data from the Johnsonville National Temperature Check survey by the Harris Poll reveals 78% of Americans are hanging out with people less than they used to, and 91% agree we make more progress when we have fun together. Jamie Schmelzer, VP of Marketing at Johnsonville.
We know lots of organizations, including the White House, are focused on America's 250th in 2026. But the data's clear. America needs fun now. We're encouraging people to celebrate our 249th because lots of us agree. Having fun together is an important part of how we make progress.
To get the party started, Johnsonville is giving 249 lucky winners the party starter, an 80-pound, 249-link variety box of sausage big enough to feed an entire block. More on the contest at Johnsonville on Instagram.
My baby brother, a father.
Come on, it's time for his nap.
Whoa, he can't sleep on his stomach. Babies should always sleep on their backs in a safety-approved crib, and the sleep area should be clear of blankets, toys, and other loose or soft items. It reduces the risk of SIDS.
SIDS?
You know, sudden infant death syndrome.
Guess I need to start studying up on safe sleep for little man here. Being his favorite uncle comes with big responsibilities.
For more information, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov, sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. You want to give your baby everything, so start with a safe sleep area. Babies younger than one should always be placed to sleep on their backs on a firm and flat surface like a safety-approved crib. And keep blankets, pillows, and other soft or loose items out of the crib when the baby is in it. Learn more about safe sleep for babies at safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at pva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach, absolutely delighted you could be with us. And wow, oh, wow, have we been seeing things going on. Really. Again, classically so. Put a blindfold on, throw a dart, you're going to hit something newsworthy. You can't help but to. An appellate court allows Trump's tariffs to continue, thus reversing a lower court's usurpation of the executive separated powers. But what happens when it does reach the Supreme Court? Also, the Supreme Court recently ruled 8-0 to limit a court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects based on supposed environmental effects on other projects outside the one in focus. Will this narrowing of judicial power impact nationwide injunctions as well? I'd like to get an answer from old friend of the show, Tom Schatz. Always great to have him on board. President of Citizens Against Government Waste. Again, his editorials on fiscal policies have appeared in publications nationwide, including the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Tom, appreciate you sticking around. And what about that? Do you see this 8-0 limit on a court's authority to halt executive-supported infrastructure projects perhaps having an impact on these nationwide injunctions as well? Will there be any dovetailing? Is it an indicator of any kind?
It's a different issue. This was a fairly simple interpretation of a statute which says when an agency is looking at environmental impacts, it can only look at the project under review. Of course, it would be impossible to say something 250 miles away might be affected by a salamander that decides to swim that far. probably what they meant or did. So, again, if it's even adjoining property, it doesn't matter. And so it made sense, and 8-0 shows that it was clear. There was no room for necessarily a big argument against what they decided. But the issue of can a judge issue an injunction for the entire country is a completely different issue.
I was hoping there might be some dovetailing on it, because this is how it was reported by Fox News' Anders Hagstrom and Greg Weiner. The Supreme Court on Thursday limited the authority of judges to block infrastructure projects due to environmental concerns. The justices handed down the lone decision Thursday morning, slightly curbing judicial authority at a time when President Donald Trump's administration is loudly complaining about alleged judicial overreach. The case, 7-County Infrastructure Coalition v. Eagle County, relates to the National Environmental Policy Act, otherwise known as NEPA, N-E-P-A, and the requirement, here's the key, for environmental impact statements in infrastructure projects supported by the federal government. Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote for the majority saying this: NEPA does not allow courts, under the guise of judicial review of agency compliance with NEPA, to delay or block agency projects based on the environmental effects of other projects separate from the project at hand. Now, I'm wondering if maybe this development is perhaps an indicator of how the justices will come down on the issue of nationwide injunctions, because it has to do with overreaching their jurisdictions as a general matter. And right now, as you know, these nationwide injunctions allow any one of 677 federal district judges to really usurp the separated powers of the executive. How? By way of camouflaging his or her political disagreement with nonsensical claims of constitutional noncompliance, usually via these tortured word association bridges. Or am I seeing too much into this, Tom Schatz?
Well, again, I think it's two different issues. They didn't discuss this other issue in that decision. I don't think you're going to get 8-0 on the ability of judges to, issue an injunction that affects the entire country. It's going to be a close vote. And there's a precedent from, I don't remember the date, but there is some precedent addressing that injunctive relief question. But it's not, this is simply the interpretation of what the statute says, which the court does a lot. And this other one is not so clear. There's no kind of statute that says judges can't do anything that affects the entire country. It's just, something that they've done. But Congress hasn't taken
steps. Well, they've done it because They've done it only because the executive branch has not yet spanked them with the check available to the president leading any executive, which is noncompliance. Thomas Jefferson did it. Lincoln did it. FDR did it. Andrew Jackson did it. Even Joe Biden did it in his own way. You know, he even bragged, oh, the Supreme Court didn't stop me. This had to do with student debt forgiveness. But the reason I ask if there's a good chance of these injunctions being batted down in general is because there is a liberal justice who was caught red-handed opposing these nationwide injunctions. Her name is Elena Kagan. And while addressing the Northwestern Prixter School of Law, this is what she had to say on the subject. Clip two, James, if you please.
In recent years, some district courts have issued nationwide injunctions, and this happened in the Trump administration, and it has also happened in the Biden administration. So this has no political tilt to it. But some district courts have very quickly issued nationwide injunctions to stop a policy in its tracks, that, you know, something that the president and or Congress has determined to be the national policy, and it just one district court stops it. And then you combine that with the ability of people to forum shop, to go to a particular district court where they think that that will be the result. And you look at something like that and you think, that can't be right, that one district court in the Trump years, people used to go to the Northern District of California. And in the Biden years, they go to Texas. And it just can't be right that one district judge can stop a nationwide policy in its tracks and leave it stopped for the years that it takes to go through normal process.
I mean, if throughout this process we don't have attorneys bringing this up when arguing in front of the Supreme Court, said attorneys should be sued for malpractice. I mean, this is like a T-ball game. I mean, it's just sitting there on a stand waiting to be whacked with a bat. Or am I mistaken?
Well, look, forum shopping is a common practice among attorneys. Beaumont, Texas is known as a great place, or places in Mississippi as well, is a great place for plaintiff's lawyers. They mentioned Northern District of California, better for defendants. So, yes, that's a constant effort by attorneys and you know, lawsuits to be, you know, taken to a certain area where the, you know that the case is going to be decided in your favor. Plus, you get different decisions in circuit courts. And that's
let me interpose for just a second. I get all that as a tactic and a strategy, and there might even be some legitimacy to it if the court's ruling as the plaintiffs would like them to rule after their judge shopping or court shopping. But that notwithstanding, you can't. The whole reason why you have circuit splits are because one region comes to a conclusion that's disparate from the conclusion reached by another. But if you have these nationwide injunctions, it's almost a way of one district superimposing a ruling in the district belonging to another jurisdiction and poisoning the well before the case has a chance to be heard in that other district. And this, I think, has to be taken care of. Otherwise, the president's going to have no choice but to use the legitimate constitutional check he has via noncompliance with a ruling that he thinks is usurping his separated power. Each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. That's the only reason why any of them can leverage a check upon the other when the other might be endeavoring to usurp those powers. In the final analysis, very quickly, do you think Trump wins on this question of nationwide injunctions? Yes or no, Tom?
I think yes, but it's going to be close.
Final word.
Building Safety Month is celebrated each May. This year marks its 45th anniversary. The 2025 theme, Game On, shows us building safety is a team sport. John Belsick, CEO of the International Code Council.
We all want to feel safe in the buildings we use every day, but many people may not realize that behind every wall, wire, and beam are building codes that specify how all the components of a building should be constructed to create safe and resilient buildings that protect us at work, at home, at school, and at play.
The International Code Council is a not-for-profit membership organization and a steward of the building code development process. New builds or renovations using international codes or I-codes are better equipped to withstand hazardous conditions, help ensure accessibility for everyone, and help save energy.
The work of the local building department is important. Consider a rewarding career in building safety. We encourage you to get involved and be part of the team.
Visit buildingsafetymonth.org to learn more.
For more than 25% of families involved in youth sports, summer travel season means a nonstop circuit of weekend trips with the team, living out of suitcases, and hunting down hotels that are close to the fields for the entire family. Travel sports mom Karen Antonini has some helpful tips.
When you're hitting the road for those travel team weekends, where you can stay really makes or breaks the trip. IHG Hotels and Resorts has a ton of options that are perfect for families on the go, conveniently located near fields, stadiums, and rec centers across the country. At Holiday Inn Express, Garner, Avid, or Atwell Suites, you'll get a free breakfast, huge when you're racing to early games. If you need more space, Staybridge Suites and Candlewood Suites offer roomy apartment-style setups with fully equipped kitchen and laundry on site, ideal for long stays and messy uniforms. Don't forget to check your hotel for kid-friendly perks like a pool or outdoor space to let the team burn off that last bit of energy after the final whistle.
For more information and to find the perfect hotel for your next youth sports trip, visit ihg.com/youthsports.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
Ugh, what are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach, covering a number of things here. There's an appellate court that allows Trump now to go forward with his tariffs, continue accordingly. This reverses a lower court's usurpation of the executive's separated powers. But what happens when it eventually gets to the Supreme Court? On this issue, we have assisting in the opining and analyzing old friend of the show, Andrew Morris, senior litigation counsel with the Civil Liberties Alliance. He served as an associate independent counsel investigating and prosecuting financial crimes and is Chambers ranked in securities litigation and has received recognition in appellate litigation. By the way, he's written on a wide range of legal topics for law reviews and other publications. But of course, his most noteworthy accomplishment is being on the Alan Nathan Show. Andrew Morris, good to have you back, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, Alan. Thank you for having me.
No, good to have you. Good to have you. So a federal court is overruling another court that first overruled Trump's tariffs. It seemed to me, and you're the attorney, something for which I've learned to forgive. You're the attorney
that.
Here. Yeah, that's okay. I'm a giver. I'm a giver. It strikes me that it was a very strange thing for the court to do. I mean, why did, in your estimation, the U.S. Court of International Trade rule that Trump's tariffs must cease because they supposedly exceed his authority, even though Congress conferred upon him that authority in Title 50? Matter of fact, let me let you hear a little quick clip here from another attorney.
Sure.
He's also a senator from the great state of Louisiana, Senator John Kennedy. He was on with Fox News' Ingram Angle with Laura Ingram. This is what he had to say on it. Clip 4, James, if you please.
I think it's pretty clear that the president has tariff authority. Congress gave it to him. Sooner or later, the Supreme Court is going to have to address this. Those who oppose the executive branch and those who oppose the legislative branch and are seeking recourse in the courts are at some point going to dig up more snakes than they can kill.
Is the senator onto something here?
He's always a tough act to follow. I'll be happy to explain, Alan. When I'll say first in full disclosure, we are the first group. We filed the first tariff case, so we kind of started this. And we still are pursuing this in another case that's ongoing at the same time. And here's why. And again, I have the utmost esteem for Senator Kennedy as a lawyer and otherwise. And I have to disagree with him on this one. And the reason is because the president didn't follow the guidelines in the ground rules and tariff laws to impose these massive tariffs. He ignored the tariff laws, skipped over them, and cited this law that, as Senator Kennedy said, is in Title 50 in this kind of national defense and foreign emergency part of the code, and said, I'm going to ignore the tariff laws, which give me authority but set limits on it. Now I'm going to use this law, and the purpose of this law, Alan, is to permit the president to react to unexpected, short, sharp emergencies by doing things like freezing assets, imposing sanctions on Russia, and taking actions against terrorist foreign organizations. It does not authorize the president to impose tariffs, which is like imposing a sales tax on American people. Taxing Americans is different from freezing the assets of foreign countries. And so I have to disagree with Senator Kennedy, because this statute, there's a lot of laws that say a lot of things about tariffs, and they specifically authorize the president to order tariffs if he goes through certain ground rules, through certain hoops. President Trump didn't want to do that, so he just ignored all that, and he's the first president ever to invoke an emergency statute to impose tariffs. So here, it's as you may know, we support presidential power in a number of contexts. Here, he's the first to say that I'm going to skip over all those laws and invoke this emergency statute, and that way there's no limits. I can impose tariff on any country, any amount, and bounce them around. And that's why.
But if the tariffs he's imposing, are either A, no more than equal to those being inflicted upon us, or B, are perhaps an increase compared to what we've been tariffing thus far, but still remains less than the initial tariffing from the original offending country, then it seems to be an opposition without merit. In other words, the most he did was go up to whatever the tariff was to which we were being subjected. But for the majority of the 184 countries that have been affected by this, for the majority of times, his increase of tariffs against these countries still remained less than the percentages to which they were subjecting us. And again, this International Emergency Economic Powers Act, IEEPA, Title 50, again,
right,
a congressional law signed by Jimmy Carter in 77, it specifically authorizes the president to declare when he believes there exists you know, quote, an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security or foreign policy or economy of the United States. When he believes there exists a threat to the economy of the United States, that go and they go on to say that originates in whole or substantial part outside the United States. End of excerpt. So once that declaration is made, he gets to control transactions with those threatening nations, even if they're friendly ones, and can even freeze assets to cope with those threats, but must, of course, update Congress every 6 months regarding the ongoing threats and actions that have been taken. It strikes me that we're looking at dividends being paid from this. I mean, well, we got a U.S.-UK deal that, but for Trump's tariffing strategy, would not have come about. We've got China now acknowledging that they have to acquiesce. That wouldn't have come about. We've got the European Union that knocked on Trump's door and said, please suspend their tariffs on us. Let us negotiate so that we can give you something that's more reasonable. But for Trump's actions, we would not be getting these forms of acquiescence. Where am I mistaken?
Well, there's a lot of fair points in there that about tariff policy and so forth. And our clients don't have a position on tariff policy. Where you're mistaken, I would say, Alan, is that is the who decides question. Our Constitution, the starting point is Congress controls taxes and tariffs.
Yes, but if they take part, if they take it, that means it's their prerogative to take that authority and confer it upon the president's discretion.
They didn't do that.
They did it with Title 50. They did it with this law.
No. When they, but there, I really have to disagree with you and with Senator Kennedy, and that is when there's a huge section of the code, Title 19, where the Congress in great detail hands off tariff authority. President Trump doesn't want to comply with the tariff laws. And here we have, and I'll give you a comparison, Alan, that is, as you may remember, COVID 5 years ago, a number of governors took these emergency laws and say, oh, if there's a sudden emergency, you can do limited orders until the legislature has time to convene. And once governors
they were usurping individual rights and prerogatives. You know that. They were imposing censorship on speech and things like that.
Well, that's still it's taking emergency authority and abusing it. It's using it when they're not beyond what it's provided for, and this is the same thing again. This does.
But the people who have standing, but the people who have standing, is Congress, and Congress decided to not challenge the president. They're the ones who have standing.
The ones who have standing are clients like ours, who are businesses, small businesses in particular, who are literally being put out of business by this. They're being crushed because they can't just go to Vietnam or go to Ohio, unfortunately, and source their businesses. So it's a direct infringement of their rights. They have a right to have the president comply with the Constitution. The Constitution says tariffs belong to Congress. Congress has laws that use the word tariff and duty.
But it's almost as if you're describing a contrast with no difference, because yes, you're right. I'm not arguing. Not even you can argue somebody who agrees with you. Yes, it's vested in Congress. But if Congress decides to confer upon the president a good portion of those powers at his discretion, then that box has been ticked. And then when we look at, and you're a lawyer, we know what standing is all about. There's three points of criteria for what constitutes standing, and they're based on the Supreme Court's ruling from Lujan v. Defenders of the Wildlife, 1992. And I know I'm going to be butchering my summarizing of these, but you got three: injury in fact, causation, and likelihood of redress. Injury in fact is a harm that is actual and imminent versus merely conjectural or hypothetical. Then you have to show causation, that is showing how said harm is traceable to the controversial conduct in focus. And then finally, likelihood of redress. You know, this is where the plaintiff must identify the remedy that a court's ruling could offer. Given that Trump has suspended, put on hold or put a pause on it, if you will, the vast majority of these tariffs, where is the harm being realized? He seems to be using it more for the purpose of strategy and tactic.
Yeah. Well, Alan, standing is not – the government hasn't disputed standing because our clients are being crushed by having to pay these big tariffs. But even before that, the error I'd suggest is that you're making is this statute has nothing to do with tariffs. This is like President Biden did with the student loans, where he cited a statute that did not authorize him to forgive student loans. Now President Trump's doing the equivalent. These presidents just cite statutes that have nothing to do with it. President Roosevelt cited an emergency statute to close the bank.
But as you know, Biden consistently lost in all the courts, including the Supreme Court, Trump just won at the appellate level. So clearly there's some residual material on which to predicate lawful disagreement. You're listening to the Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network.
Severe bleeding can happen anytime, anywhere, and is a leading cause of preventable death in the U.S. Dr. David S. Shapiro from the American College of Surgeons has more.
Thousands of lives could be saved every year with faster access to trauma care, including applying bleeding control techniques at the scene of an injury.
Bleeding injuries have been called a national emergency, prompting the American College of Surgeons to develop its Stop the Bleed program to teach the public how to recognize and respond to a bleeding emergency. The ACS Stop the Bleed program provides free training and works to place emergency response kits in public spaces, such as airports and arenas.
ACS Stop the Bleed teaches you three simple techniques to help save a life before emergency crews arrive. You'll learn how to apply pressure to a wound, pack it to slow bleeding, and properly use a tourniquet. ACS Stop the Bleed kits have items not included in most first aid kits. Learn to save a life today.
Find training and get your ACS Stop the Bleed kit at stopthebleed.org.
When you or a family member are diagnosed with a chronic illness, everything can change, and caregivers learn to manage complicated care schedules on top of their own daily lives. Tricia Fitzgerald is a mom who's been managing treatment not only for herself, but also for her husband and their six children, all of whom suffer from some type of chronic illness. She explains.
Raising a large family is challenging with busy schedules, school functions, let alone when everyone has a chronic illness. So it's important to make sure you have a strong support system. Managing so many medications for eight individuals can be daunting, but CVS Health is my rock. Anytime I have a medication or insurance question, I know who to call for guidance or answers. CVS is a huge corporation, but it feels more like a small town pharmacy down the street where we've known each other for years, and that makes such a difference when I'm managing care for the chronic conditions my family faces.
For more information, visit CVSHealth.com.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep for naps and at night to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
Hmm. You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True. But now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave. But unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now.
We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Happy yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis. For those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach, you'll have to excuse me. I need to just go on this tariff thing just a little bit longer, because there is a legitimacy to those who say, well, we want to embrace free trade and tariffs don't factor into that. They're right. But unless that mindset is practiced by both sides of a given trade deal, then free trade is the last thing that's part of the equation. Now, Trump imposed reciprocal tariffs back in April, right, on something like 184 countries, with percentages that either mirrored what they had been charging us or remained less despite the increases. And, of course, he called it Liberation Day, and this shook the world into, I think, what proved to be a long overdue wake-up call. And so loud was the alarm clock that Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said at the time that 75 of those nations were already prepared to negotiate changes, including having zero tariffs and zero duties, which, of course, led to Trump putting up this 90-day pause on most of the countries to allow negotiations to materialize into agreements. Now, to those who claim he backed down, as a reporter recently did, and Trump said it was a very nasty question, how am I backing down if I'm prevailing in this way and that way and the other way? But let Trump speak for himself. But to those who, generally speaking, are claiming that he backed down, he appears to be conveying that these 75 nations would not have come around had he not moved as he had, and now the others can see the writing on the wall, and that's why they've come home. That's why we have a U.S.-UK deal. That's why China's come around. All right? That's why the European Union knocked on Trump's door, said, hey, please, hold off on the tariffs. We'll negotiate with you. We'll make things better. We'll get these numbers lower, blah, blah, blah. Whatever else they're going to go along with, whatever we wind up with, will by default be far better than what we've had thus far. If he only does that, he has demonstrated a measurable, verifiable improvement. Also, he pointed out the other reason why he wanted to put the pause is he felt it was necessary that as president, he showed that he can be flexible. Now, the Treasury Secretary Bessent, he added that this whole pause would allow Trump to be personally involved in formulating the changes. I see that happening. Mr. Art of the Deal, sure, I could see him being part of that. Oddly enough, however, critics are vilifying Trump for having had the temerity to counter the double standards of these countries, as well as those who are criticizing him for what he's doing. This is like an observer yelling at you for smacking someone in the mouth after that someone punches you in the face. I mean, in what universe are you not permitted to respond in kind? I mean, only those who are sociopathic, disingenuous, or delusional refuse to acknowledge that we can never permit nations to demonize us for that which they embody and still have them and their defenders taken seriously. Are you kidding me? And their clumsy hypocrisy is irksome because it insultingly presupposes a naivete that the 2024 election proved is simply not there anymore. Americans are more attuned than ever. Now, on the issue of tariffs in general, the argument claiming that responding with those of your own will only make things worse is one that is so nonsensical. I mean, it imbecilically holds that the best response to poor behavior is to reward it with no consequences. When has that tactic ever proven viable? But you still have fans of that approach. Libertarian Republican Senator, Senator Rand Paul, says, quote, on tariffs, I think it's just economically, it's a fallacy to think that it will help the country. Tariffs are a tax. And if you tax trade or if you tax anything, you'll get less of it. So he and other like-minded alleged free thinkers insist that no tariff should be the rule, but they forget that such a normally correct formula, and it is a correct formula, but this normally correct formula only works when both sides of the equation practice it. You both got to be doing it. Otherwise, by definition, they're not really defending free trade, are they? So why do they stick to that simplistic line as if we're not verifiably facing an iniquitous dynamic quite bereft of that otherwise requisite parity? We don't have an existing two sides of a trade deal, each embracing free trade. No, we've had four decades, when looking at the 184 countries that are affected by what Trump did, we've had for multiple decades too many trading partners who've had nothing to do with free trade. They've just been zapping us with crazy tariffs. And you would think a libertarian would know better than to debate in defense of a principle that does not have all the pieces in place necessary for said principle to be viable. Yes, we all want to embrace free trade. Tariffs are stupid. Agreed. But you can't go that route unless both sides of a given equation are practicing the sucker. Unless both sides are embracing free trade, you don't have free trade going on. Rand Paul might as well say, thou shalt not kill. Even when you must, if you're to survive the one shooting at you. I mean, Paul could not be arguing in any more of a vacuum if he were shrink-wrapped inside an Electrolux. It's almost as if Trump's opponents are saying that we should yield more to these tariff-imposing nations in the hope that they'll eventually take away less. When has that ever won the contest? When? What does appear to show signs of working against the unacceptable status quo, however, is Trump's non-status quo trade formula. Hence the dozens upon dozens upon dozens of nations coming around with more expected to follow. I mean, in less than a week after he did that Liberation Day thing, we saw him corral just over 38% of the 184 nations who had been disproportionately tariffing us. Imagine where we could be in 3 weeks from this point on to remedy this decades old imbalance. Just keeping at that track record, keeping at that trajectory. I'm sorry, but if incentives reinforce good behavior, then clearly disincentives counter the bad. How can you have one without the other? Again, free trade, it's always ideal. Yet claiming its advocacy can never justify not fighting back against those whose conduct is thoroughly estranged from that ideal. According to Plato's The Gorgias, Socrates once said, "The supreme object of a man's efforts in public and private life must be the reality rather than the appearance of goodness." The dude still has a point, especially on this issue. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.